Welcome back, everybody. We welcome Dr. Amir Mohit, an associate professor in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, and Metabolism at the University of Minnesota. He's actively engaged in clinical and translational research in the areas of diabetes, obesity, and its complications. His clinical and research interests include cystic fibrosis-related diabetes, and he's examining the pathogenesis on hypoglycemia in CF, and also developing novel strategies for management of CFRD in obese or overweight patients with CF. Today, he presents CFRD management through technology. Welcome, Dr. Mohit.
Well, thank you, Jim, for the very kind introduction. Hello, everyone. I would like to just start off by thanking the Cystic Fibrosis Research Institute and the planning committee for the invitation, and I'm really excited to be part of this meeting. And as Jim noted, I'll be talking about use of technology in improving management of cystic fibrosis-related diabetes. So here's an overview of what I'll try to cover in the next 25 minutes or so. I'll talk about the currently available diabetes technologies, talk about how some unique aspects of cystic fibrosis-related diabetes, or I'll call them going forward CFRD, may benefit from use of some of these technologies, and also review the current literature of use of these technologies in cystic fibrosis-related diabetes. So I'm going to start off with a case. So this is a 24-year-old person with cystic fibrosis who was seen as in a new consultation for management of CFRD. He has history of pancreatic insufficiency. His recent A1C was 10.8%, but on review of records, unfortunately, A1C has been chronically above 10%. BMI was on the low side at 19. He reports being diagnosed with diabetes around age 16. He has history of gastroparesis. His appetite is variable on some days. To supplement calorie intake, he is on overnight tube feeds. And he's been recommended or prescribed a multiple daily insulin injections or MDI regimen, which takes a glargine insulin shot once a day. He's also on aspart insulin for meals and snack, but really doesn't do carb count, usually just guesstimates the dose. Also uses NPH when he uses tube feeds. He frequently forgets and misses meal boluses. He's been recommended to check finger stick blood glucose based on the guidelines multiple times in the day, but he has had trouble with doing it. He finds it difficult and painful to do it, and also has had one episode of severe hypoglycemia where he had EMS had to be called in. He has developed severe fear of hypoglycemia since, and he keeps his blood glucose high around 200 milligrams per deciliter. And the severe hypoglycemia happened in the setting when he took the NPH and the tube feeds were interrupted that night. And he also works part-time, so his schedule is variable on some days. So when you look at a history like that, and there's several things that really kind of jump out at you, and I've kind of highlighted some of those clinical factors in red here. And you can see, looking at his chronically high A1C, gastroparesis, changes in appetite, tube feeding, MDI, difficulty with counting carbs or estimating bolus dosing, frequently missing bolus dosing, difficulty with finger stick monitoring, fear of hypoglycemia, and a variable schedule. So when you look at these points, again, these are not uncommon scenarios, and many of these factors, again, the treatment of diabetes has to be really individualized for each patient. But many of these factors, can be helped by use of some of the available technology in diabetes, and as we will discuss today. So just a little bit of a background. I mean, if you are well aware that cystic fibrosis-related diabetes is extremely common, and most people with CF as they get older will develop diabetes. So if you look at the prevalence, it's close to about 50% in people who are 30 and 40 years of age or older. And if you look at within those groups, people who have severe genotype, the prevalence is even higher. Now, unfortunately, the diagnosis of CFRD has been associated with increased mortality. This is a well-known data that looks at relationship between mortality and CFRD diagnosis from University of Minnesota. And it looks at four different time periods, starting at 1992 to 1997, and then sort of every 5 years since. And most recently, they looked at 2008 to 2012. And here, the solid lines, the red and blue solid lines, show female and males with diabetes, and the dotted lines are persons without diabetes. And you can see that, you know, as people get older, there's increased risk, a higher mortality in people with diabetes. And as the years have gone by, and in the more recent data, you can see this gap is narrowing, which is great. And but still, there's some gap still exists, particularly when they go above age 35 or so. And it is thought that the more aggressive and early screening of diabetes, along with insulin therapy, may have been one of the factors that have helped sort of narrow this gap. Now, based on the current guidelines, as many of you are well aware, right now, insulin is the recommended pharmacological therapy for management of CFRD. And that's based because the insulin therapy in CF has been shown to improve important outcomes, including glycemic control. It improves nutritional status, improves lung function, and is associated with decreased frequency of pulmonary exacerbation. But it's also been shown that insulin significantly contributes to the treatment burden and has been shown to negatively impact health-related quality of life measures in persons with CFRD compared to people with CF who do not have diabetes. So what are our goals of management of cystic fibrosis-related diabetes? So when we kind of look at an overview of it, then obviously we want to control the hyperglycemia, because we know there can be acute and chronic complications of high glucose readings. We want to avoid any severe hypoglycemia as a complication of insulin therapy. We also want to optimize nutritional status to allow the children to grow and develop normally, and also to allow the adults to maintain normal body weight. And besides that, another important factor in this management goal is to facilitate adaptation to living with CFRD from a psychological, social, and emotional perspective, you know, ensuring as much as flexibility as possible within the framework of this patient's lifestyle and condition. Now, I'm going to go over sort of a quick review of some of the glucose technologies associated with diabetes. And some of you are maybe more familiar than others, but I'll kind of give you from a very simple sort of overview here. So one of the, we'll start with continuous glucose monitoring, and it's called CGM. And, you know, I've seen many of patients still use finger stick glucose monitoring, but increasingly those tools are being replaced now with these more advanced technologies that provide more useful data and greater convenience. So these CGMs are becoming and emerging as a standard of care in diabetes, especially in people who are on intensive insulin therapy. So these devices can continuously measure glucose concentration in the interstitial fluid, which correlates with the blood glucose concentration. So here you can see a cartoon where you see the arrow. There's a small fiber that goes through the sensor and the skin and sits under the skin, and it's continuously bathes in the interstitial fluid and continuously measures the glucose concentration. And then the sensor is connected to a transmitter, which sends the data to a receiver or an app in a mobile phone. Generally speaking, now currently, when you look at personal CGMs, there are two types of CGMs. One is called a real-time or RT CGM. These are CGMs which continuously look at, measure and continuously transmit the glucose data to the receiver. Whereas another type of sensors are called intermittent scanning CGM. So here you may have seen in pictures or videos, or some of your family members or yourself are using it, where you have to really take the scanner or the mobile phone and scan it over the sensor, and then you get the current and the historical glucose data transferred. So these CGMs really provide patients and providers a very comprehensive view of what is happening with their glucose over the course of the day and night. Here you can see this picture of a glucose profile of one of my patients, and it looks provides data from each day from midnight to next midnight. And you know, you can really get a very comprehensive profile, which is very helpful in educating as well as coming, you know, adjusting therapy. So one of the advantages of these continuous glucose monitors, you get real-time data. It has predictive arrows, which indicate the direction and velocity of changing glucose levels. And these data enable persons with diabetes to respond in a very timely fashion to mitigate or prevent either acute highs or acute lows. So this is a really important and game-changing features, which is really helps with preventing lows and high glucose. The sensors can have alarms to alert the user of high and low readings, and these alarms can be customized. You have the ability to share the data with your provider, other family members. It provides for retrospective review of the glucose data, which can help adjust your treatment regimen. And these devices have been extensively studied, particularly in type 1 diabetes, and it's been shown that they improve glycemic control as well as psychosocial well-being when studied in type 1 diabetes. I want to spend a minute or two just talking about CGM-based glycemic targets. Now, traditionally, when we talk about glycemic target, we think about finger stick monitoring glucose targets, or we think about A1C. But increasingly, I'm sure you hear about this terminology called time in range, or time below range, or time above range. And these are glycemic targets based on data of continuous glucose monitor. Here on the, most of the CGM reports will show you a bar like this, and which here you're in the green. Here you can see this is the time in range where the glucose is between 70 to 100 milligrams per deciliter. And the current guidelines recommend that our goal is to keep this above 70. Similarly, there are target goals for high and as well as for low readings. And next to it, you can see this bar is from one of my patients, and you can see that the patient is not meeting the target goal criteria. Our target range is in 54%. The person is not having any lows. As you can see, the lows is below 1%, but certainly the readings are running high. Now, this is a statement from the most recent American Association of Clinical Endocrinology's guidelines on use of technology, and they strongly recommend use of CGM in all people with diabetes who are intensive insulin therapy, meaning 3 or more injections of insulin a day or use of an insulin pump. And that's what we've been. I think most of we offer CGM to most of all of our patients who meet this criteria who are on intensive insulin therapy or who are using insulin pump. Now we come to the conventional insulin pumps. Now, pumps have been available for a while, and they have been present even before we had the CGMs. And these are essentially, for those who are not familiar with these are insulin delivery devices. So the insulin pumps deliver small amounts of short-acting insulin through a subcutaneous cannula. Here you can see this attached to the skin and it allows for a continuous basal insulin delivery. And the user can give extra insulin called the bolus insulin whenever they're eating or ingesting carbohydrates. So it really provides a lot of convenience. So instead of taking 5-6 injections a day, you can take multiple boluses without need of any injections, and this cannula has to be changed usually about every 3 days or so. There's a lot of flexibility that the pumps offer. The user can adjust the basal rates, which is very useful in type 1 and also in CF diabetes, because people don't have the same basal insulin requirement all throughout the day. When you take an injection of a long-acting insulin like glargine, you're kind of assuming that their basal requirement is the same 24 hours, whereas certain people have different requirements. They have their requirement is different and early in the morning. They may be different when they're more active during the day. And the pump really allows you to make these customizable basal settings that improve glycemic control and reduces risk of low. You can set up multiple profiles, which is particularly relevant with patients with CF for exercise or sick day management. They have inbuilt bolus calculators, which can really help with giving bolus dosing. It has been shown, just like CGM, if you use CGM alone, just by using CGM alone in type 1 diabetes, it's been shown to improve glycemic control, Similarly, just using the pump alone in type 1 diabetes has been shown to reduce treatment burden and also reduce improved glycemic control. Now, the more recent development has been these hybrid closed loop system, and that's been a very exciting development, and that's something that we've been using quite frequently in our practice. So these advanced, these hybrid closed loop system are essentially where the continuous glucose monitor is integrated with the pump. So the sensor is sending the glucose data to the pump, and pump can automatically adjust basal rates based on the data from the CGM. So it can increase the basal rate if glucose readings are high, or it can suspend the insulin if the glucose is low. Some of the systems also give automated correction boluses. They're called hybrid because they're not fully automated yet, because the user still has to announce the meal, meaning that you have to put in the carbohydrate. And the goal is eventually to the fully closed loop system would be developed where the meal or, you know, does not have to be announced by the user. Here is some data from the pivotal trial of two of the hybrid closed loop system. Here on my left, here this is data from Medtronic, and this is the Tandem Control IQ. And these data really show here. You can see in this slide here, in the Medtronic data, the pink area is after switching to control, to the closed loop system. So these patients were already using a pump and a sensor, but adding the closed loop system further improves the Tyson range and makes it really nice and tight, as you can see the glucose variability. And similar things in Tandem, this was a randomized control trial, and you know, the use of the closed loop further improved the time in range. Now, one of the more recent developments has been the use of these connected smart pens. And I think this has been a very helpful advancement as well. So these are insulin pens, are reusable, injectable pen devices. And they are attached, work with a smartphone app and really help people with diabetes manage their insulin delivery. It has many features, so the people who do not want to use a pump, this pen is very helpful because it tracks the insulin dosing. It has a bolus calculator, just like what you have in pump. It can be combined with glucose monitoring, either finger stick or with continuous glucose monitor. It can be set up to send alerts for missed doses. And also you can share the data with the healthcare team remotely. And here is, you can see, this is logs from one of my patients, and you can see how you can look at this, who wears a continuous glucose monitor and uses it with a pen. And here you can look at, it's really, there's these retrospective reviews are very helpful to see what was going on and see where the opportunities are to improve glycemic control. And then I think this sharing the data is very helpful. And I want to just highlight this feature among all these technologies, either sensor, pump, or this pen, because many of our patients have a significant commute to get to the CF center. So patients who are able to share this data remotely, we can very effectively manage their diabetes through telemedicine. And I think that's one of the things we have learned over this COVID, that you know, we can manage CFRD effectively in virtual visits, particularly in patients who are using this technology and who are able to share the data. All right, so what are some of the unique aspects of CFRD management that really can, you know, where this technology really comes into play and could be very useful? As we talked about, patients with CFRD, you know, the insulin therapy adds to the significant treatment burden on top of, you know, other complex medical care that the patient has to do and requiring frequent glucose monitoring, carbohydrate counting, multiple daily injections. So here, you know, this can be helpful in making things more convenient. Now, patients with CF can have changing insulin requirement, like with exacerbation or use of glucocorticoid therapy. Many patients require high calorie intake with, you know, which requires frequent snacks and meals with high in carbohydrate. Patients may be on tube feeds. Some patients have gastroparesis with delayed GI absorption. And all these clinical potential issues can be managed, or are there features in this technology that can help with optimizing the glucose control in this setting? Now, many of, unfortunately, patients with CFRD can have reactive hypoglycemia. Now, this is low blood sugar due to dysfunctional insulin release in patients who don't have diabetes or are not on insulin therapy. And we have used CGM in these patients to diagnose, educate, and sometimes, you know, manage reactive hypoglycemia. And it's been very helpful in that area as well. And again, I talked already about the ability to the advantages of remote monitoring and telemedicine. Now I'm going to shift gear a little bit and talk about what evidence or we have of use of this technology in patients with CFRD. So just to tell you this overall, and we have very limited data of use, published studies of these devices in management of cystic fibrosis related diabetes. So here is a study which looked at initiation of insulin therapy based on hyperglycemia on CGM use. So what they did was these were adults without diagnosis of CFRD who underwent 72 hour CGM monitoring. And then they looked at the glucose profile for 59 patients, and out of which insulin was initiated in 37 patients who had evidence of hyperglycemia based on the CGM monitoring. And then looked at clinical outcomes in weight and pulmonary function over the next 12 months, and they compared it between the groups, meaning the groups who had high glucose on CGM, required insulin therapy, a second group had normal readings, and the third group who required dietary adjustments. And they saw the patients who were initiated insulin at 3 months, here you can see in these graphs, had significant weight gain, significant improvement in pulmonary function and hair, and significant weight gain, and also significant improvement in glycemic control. So here, CGM was used to help with initiation of glucose of insulin therapy, and which showed to improve some clinically relevant outcomes. However, we really don't have any published studies to guide us about impact of CGM on CFRD patients who are already being treated with insulin. What happens to their insulin diabetes on their glycemic controls or their treatment burden. We have anecdotal reports or clinical experience, but we really don't have a lot of published data in that area. Here is another study of, this is a little older study, about 10 years ago, of use of insulin pump in CFRD. So they had 9 patients with CF. There are 5 males and 4 females, an average age of 27, with established diabetes, who were switched from taking multiple daily injections to insulin pump for 6 months. And in all these patients, you can see the table here. This is the baseline on the top row here. And then after 6 months of insulin therapy, there's improvement in weight, improvement in lean body mass, improvement in A1C, improvement in fasting and 2-hour postprandial glucose, and also there's increase in insulin dose. So overall, insulin therapy in this small trial showed improvement in clinical outcomes, and there was high satisfaction. And then the authors reported that all but one patients wanted to continue with the pump therapy. Now I'm going to talk about a very recent study, which was led by Dr. Bryn Marks and just came out this about a week ago or so, which looked at perceptions and use of diabetes technology in CFRD. Now, the objective of the survey was to survey CF community to better understand use and perceptions of diabetes technology. So it was a 30-item online survey addressing CFRD diagnosis, CGM, and insulin pump use, and also perceptions about this technology. And percent to the CF community included people with CF and also parents of children with CF. So the response rate was about 11%, 120 people responded, out of which about 2/3 were people with CF and about 1/3 were parents of children with CF. About 50% of the respondents had diabetes, and among the people who had diabetes, 75% use CGM, so pretty high rate of CGM use in this in these survey respondents, and about 29% uses reported use of insulin pump. So here's the data from this survey. So that's pretty interesting. So I'll take a minute or two to kind of run to kind of walk you through this study. And here in this slide, we're looking at the perceived benefits and burden of CGM use. And you can see the benefits is on top part of the figure here and burdens on the bottom. And they looked at these questions about looking at, okay, does it make taking care of diabetes easier? Does it help with taking care of low glucose reading? Are the alarms helpful? Does it make me feel more secure? So very relevant questions. And, you know, 91% agreed or strongly agreed with that CGM facilitated CFRD management. And 75% agreed or strongly agreed with at least all seven positive statements about CGM. In the study survey, 19% of the people indicated that they discontinued CGM use. And the common concerns were cost, loss of insurance, increased worry about glucose, not wanting to wear the device, or not being able to really understand the CGM information. Now, this figure looks at the use of insulin pump. I think it's mistaken my title here. So this is looking at the perceived benefit and burdens of insulin pump. And here you can see much less of uptake in terms of use. And if you look at only 22% agreed or strongly agreed with at least five of the seven positive statements about the pump, and 28% discontinued the pump. And the most common causes reported were pain or skin irritation, disliking wearing the pump, or physician orders. So this survey identified high rates of CGM use and very positive perception of this technology, but lower rates of user and less positive perception about insulin therapy. And discontinuation rate seems to be high for both of these technologies as compared to some of the data from type 1 diabetes. Now, again, there's some limitation of this survey. I mean, there could be some non-response bias. And also this survey, you know, was in people who were highly motivated, self-selected group of CF community voice participants. And it could be possible that overrepresented technology use in this population. However, this is, again, it is very important, and the survey provides important insights into the opportunity to optimize education and uptake of these technology among those with CFRD. And the last, I will show you this data from our study that this is unpublished data, but we are going to be submitting it for publication very soon. This is in collaboration with Dr. Putman and Dr. Scalia in Boston. And what we looked at the effect of using one of the hybrid closed loop system, also called Control IQ, on glycemic control. And this was a retrospective review among adolescents and adults with CFRD as they started using the hybrid closed loop system. And our primary outcome was to look at percentage time in range. That's the kind of what I've initially shown you based on CGM. And we also looked at other CGM outcomes, including average glucose and low variability and low glucose. So here is the baseline characteristics about, you know, in the study, you know, people had long duration of diabetes, about 14 years. Average age was 25. And again, all of these people were already using CGM, and about 40% of them were using injections before, and other 60% were on some kind of pump before they transitioned onto using the closed loop, the hybrid closed loop system. And here are the results. And you can see after 3 months, we looked at data at 1 month and 3 months. This is the first line is average glucose, and you can see the average glucose improved from 189 to 159. And the time in range improved from 54 to 70%. And similarly, time in range for readings above 180 or above 250 also significantly improved. So really, this is the first data showing that this hybrid closed loop system was beneficial in improving glycemic control in patients with CFRD. This is another way of looking at the data. Here, each of the line represents each of the patient, and we're looking at average glucose, standard deviation, and time in range. And you can see it improves standard average glucose, improves variability, and also improves time in range. This is another way of looking at the data. Here, the important thing is, you know, as we talked about, our goal is to get to more than 70% time in range. And here we looked at the proportion of participants who achieved the recommended guideline before and after the control IQ. Before they started on the control IQ, only 31% of the people were meeting the criteria. And after 3 months, 75% had time in range. That's a pretty significant improvement. Again, this is a small study and it has limitations as it's a retrospective analysis, but it kind of highlights, and it's the first data to show improvement in CFRD. So again, we showed that control IQ improves glycemic control and glycemic variability without causing significant hypoglycemia. But we really need future studies to better understand long-term glycemic benefits of these devices and how they impact quality of life and other outcomes like pulmonary function and nutritional status. I'm just going to end by just summarizing that, you know, diabetes technology is rapidly changing. Even in the last few years, it has changed and it's improving at a very, very positive pace. And these technologies can be beneficial for all patients living with diabetes. And you know, CFRD requires a multidisciplinary approach. And you know, every person treatment needs to be individualized, but working with a knowledgeable team who can provide education and training and help choose, when indicated, the right type of diabetes technology to that best fits that person's lifestyle and needs. And we really need more research to really understand the impact of this technology on clinical and quality of life outcomes in CFRD. And also need research to understand if there are any barriers that exist for the uptake of this technology in the CF population. And this, with this, I really like to thank you all for your attention, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay, so do you know the prevalence of CFRD for those who have had a lung transplant?
It's a great question. I can look it up, but on the top of my head, I don't remember. But certainly, post-transplant setting is a risk factor for worsening glycemia, and we know that. Particularly in many patients who get transplanted in older age may have pre-existing diabetes, and certainly risk goes up after the transplant. But I'm sorry, on the top of my hand, I don't remember the number.
We can get that to you though, I bet, after this.
Yeah.
What are resource recommendations for people who are borderline for CFRD to slow down the timeline for needing insulin, specifically interested in dietary recommendations as someone who is an endurance athlete?
Great question. That's a really good question. I think that's a really important field of overall diabetes management. We unfortunately, I mean, there's some ongoing studies looking at that. There is really at this point no specific evidence-based dietary guidelines that we know of that have really studied in a scientific way that we can say can help change the clinical course of this impaired glucose tolerance. There is obviously all of us are well aware of the highly effective modulators now that are available, and I think that is really the big question is how that is going to impact the stage. I think that will be probably at the stage the most likely thing that we will learn in terms of that may impact the time course of this. Would hopefully with the triple modulators when it's initiated early, that may, we don't know that, but that's something that's been actively studied. I think exercise is a great question. There's no evidence-based answer that I can provide. Certainly depending upon, your nutritional status and where your weight is and so forth, there are a number of different things that go into it. Certainly there was a lot of question about if early insulin would be helpful in these patients or not. And it may be relevant for some patients who are underweight or having, losing weight or having more exacerbation, where others people who are much healthy or even maybe overweight, and that may be a different, completely different situation now. And I think that's a good question, but I don't have a great evidence of his answer of any strategies to delay CFRD.
Another person said, I was hoping when my prednisone dose lowers, so would my need for insulin. But if anything, it's worse or just a sky high. Do any patients taper off insulin?
That's a very good question. I think it is really challenging with steroids, and every person is different in how they respond to steroids. So I'm assuming we're talking about a situation where the person may have not been on on insulin before initiating steroids, and this is a new use just for that acute illness and steroid. Yes, many people who just start insulin with steroid can come off of it. But again, it's a very sort of individualized situation as to where they were in terms of their glucose tolerance prior to and what other factors are going on. If the steroids are in the setting of transplant, that may be very different as opposed to just one-time exacerbation. But the short answer is yes. If the steroids are just short-term and you were not on insulin before, hopefully that you would be able to eventually be taper off. I hope that answers.
Let's see, Missy asked, do the smart pens do half units or smaller?
I'll have to check with my diabetes education. I'm not 100% sure. I think they may be, but I'm not sure, so I will not commit to that. But it's easy. I can look it up, but it can be easily looked it up as well. Yeah. Good question. Yeah.
And let's see, has the introduction of CFTR modulator therapy affected the diagnosis or management of CFRD?
Great question. I think that's the thing that is on all of us mind, right? Both as clinicians and researchers and families and patients, that's what will happen. We have had seen very variable responses. I mean, again, there is no really published data on on Trikafta long term. I was part of the study that looked at Orkambi with Dr. Moran. Unfortunately, as you know, that Orkambi didn't have a significant impact on glycemia outcomes. But again, this is the new CF, the Trikafta is much more effective, and the hope is that it may, but we don't know. I think in our clinical practice, we've had variable response. I'm sure many of you are aware of patients who have had come off of insulin after going on Trikafta. Some are having more hypoglycemia. There are others who have had no response. So I think it depends on what stage of diabetes they are. Maybe people who are in early stages may be more responsive. There are also weight changes, and there's also changes in absorption of nutrients. So there are a lot of things that are playing into it. So again, there are a lot of anecdotes and case reports of variable responses based on, but we don't have any. So I think this ongoing PROMISE study, as many of you know about. So hopefully we're looking forward to seeing what the results would be and how that affects it.
Thank you. And yes, my daughter is one of those anecdotal cases that is now off insulin. So I am so sorry to cut this short. May I impose on you to swing back to you to get answers to the other questions that we couldn't get to? So we
can absolutely. Yes, please.
Wonderful. Thank you. We are so grateful to you for sharing your time and your expertise with us. And so we have to end this session now, but I invite everybody to join us for Jennifer Taylor Kauser's presentation on diversity in the CF community. So thank you everybody for being here, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you so much.